Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin and helping you maneuver through this modern dystopia. It's episode number 150 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up in the next hour plus at 1:30, we recap the college football weekend, including a wild one between Ohio State and Indiana. At 1, the Cowboys and Texans both win yesterday. A little bit shocking. In a mere minutes, we react to Tom Herman's Monday presser. I'm Trey Elling. Behind the glass today is a guy who always makes sure the horn section sounds good and the inventor of Am I the A-Hole, which he never is because he's the chillest dude in the room. It is Shoeless Sam Pika. What's up, Sam? How are you?
Doing pretty good. It smells like cinnamon in here. That's like top five smells, so.
Much better than what it normally smells like with your shoes off in there. And sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings. I don't hear you at all. Is he in one? Is he up a little bit more?
You're damn
there we go.
Right. Hope everybody's having a good Monday. Happy Thanksgiving week. It always feels cramped. It always feels like everything is like you're never quite on top of everything. But it is a short week for a lot of people, and a lot of folks do not have to work each and every day of the week. Kind of like us. We hope you're in that situation. A lot to get to today, football-wise, as we get ready for the Thanksgiving feast to come. Real quick, before we jump into Texas stuff, just to throw some football reality out there, the Ravens have announced that they've closed their facility after learning of multiple members of the organization have tested positive. We do not know how this affects Thursday night's game. If you didn't know, Steelers-Ravens is Thursday night. If they don't play that game, my heart is going to shatter. The Ravens have begun the process of contact tracing. All activities are being handled virtually. Let's cross the fingers. Trey, so far the NFL has been able to deal with those kind of things really, really well.
Yeah, they get things back on track pretty quickly.
They do.
And they get guys back to active much more quickly than what we're seeing on the college side.
No doubt. Their contact tracing stuff has been really, really good, and it definitely hasn't been the length of time we've seen in college ball. Coming up a little later on in the show, Trey mentioned 1 o'clock with the Cowboys and Texans talk. We'll have Joe Cook of Inside Texas at 2, and coming up at 2:30 today, the anniversary of one of the craziest college football plays ever. Today is Doug Flutie Day, if you will. We'll be talking about that and some of our favorite Hail Marys. But we jump right in, as we always do on a Monday, reacting to Tom Herman's press conference. Trey, you're the Longhorn fan sitting in this room. What'd you think of your head coach today?
Well, this is the boring press conference that we needed last Monday, Chad. We get some injury updates. Tom Herman, as Cedric Golden put on Twitter, as he was listening to what Herman was saying about Iowa State, made them sound like an early 90s Dallas Cowboys football team, just expressing his gratitude for Sam Ellinger and what he's done for the program and the guys who will be saying goodbye, their final game at DKR, the seniors, if you will. It's a pretty ho-hum presser for Herman, which was the opposite of what happened last week.
Yeah, I would agree. It is what he needed. Got a nice safe landing, too, with the Thanksgiving question at the end. I thought all that was good. It was properly boring when it needed to be. And the biggest stuff that would come out of it would be your injury report. And the only, I guess, iffy news would be Keontae Ingram. Coach Herman said Ingram would be listed right now as questionable. The good news started with Joshua Moore and Jared Wiley. He said they would both be considered probable. And then the next bit of good news is he said any of the others that you'd be thinking about or would ask about are expected to play. So, Trey, that immediately put this list in my head. Keandre Coburn, Cade Brewer, Whittington, and Jake Smith all immediately popped in my head as guys that have been dealing with stuff these last few weeks. And obviously Sam Ellinger trying to get as healthy as he can, but he hasn't been on an injury report. So I would think that's really good news for those guys. And the 12 personnel that went away last week ends up not mattering because there wasn't a game. Mm-hmm. Now I'm guessing you're going to be able to, not that you want to get into a tight end versus tight end discussion with this Iowa State team, but you should be able to use multiple tight ends if you want to, it sounds like.
And no disrespect to Keontae Ingram, Hope he gets back to full health and can contribute to this Longhorn football team once again by the end of the year. But I'm okay with having one less running back option to choose from versus the Cyclones this Friday. I would like to see a heavier dose of Bijan Robinson with a little bit of Roschon Johnson sprinkled in. You're running Sam when you have to, although I would also suggest that if you don't have to run him, don't. Let him go with some of the unscripted stuff. But as far as the plays that you're calling, give a bigger shot in the arm to Bijan Robinson. See what he can do with 15 to 20 touches in a game.
So you'd like to be able to give thanks to number five at the end of the day?
Sure.
I thought it was interesting Tom Herman brought those stats up about Bijan Robinson and freshman backs and four- and five-star backs and all that stuff. And all I kept thinking was, sounds like he needs more carries, coach.
Yeah, you're doing a great job through the first two series of these last couple of games, but then you just, for whatever reason, decide to sprinkle the carries throughout the rest of the way.
And, Trey, this is not an accurate way necessarily to look at a game. It's not the most fair way to look at a game. But if Texas loses this game and Texas fans go back and look at the stat sheet and they see Breece Hall with a whole lot of carries because he's a bell cow back, and they see Bijan Robinson again with not enough carries for their liking, that's going to be a horrible look. And we all understand what that would mean ultimately. But that's the, so I'm not saying you necessarily give him those carries because he's facing Hall. I'm just saying the other side is firmly comfortable with the idea of giving the guy the football. And Texas fans will watch this game and think, that is what you need to be doing. You need to identify who your guy is and hand him the ball and throw him the ball.
It's just like Herman's reluctance to run the offense with a little bit more pace. Like, he's reluctant to do things that work, and I just don't understand it because it goes against, idealistically, how he would like to run this show. Like, that sucks, but once the bullets start flying, figuratively speaking, then all of a sudden game plans change, and you figure out what works and what helps you not only win games, but operate at the most efficient manner possible. And there are certain things about this offense, which has struggled mightily throughout the course of the 2020 season, that we seem better off doing versus not doing. Rod has talked about one of those elements on the triple option, done a great job explaining this, how you need to go with more empty backfield sets. It actually helps with your protection quite a bit. Giving Bijan Robinson the football a little bit more and operating this offense in a little bit more of a hurry-up style, all of those things will be beneficial for you.
So how much of Iowa State's win over K-State did you watch?
I watched a good chunk of the first half. It was over with at halftime, though.
Did you learn anything?
I learned that Kansas State, for as much fight as they have in them, they're just out of gas at this point. And when they fall behind by 14 points, I'm sure Howard is going to end up being a nice quarterback one day, but he clearly does not have what it takes to bring a team back with his arm. So if you get up by a couple of scores on K-State, you're in a pretty good position. We saw that happen with West Virginia. But also, it looks like Iowa State is starting to click offensively. They're doing a great job of mixing in those three tight ends with the receivers that Brock Purdy has at his disposal to go along with Breece Hall being the best running back in the Big 12.
I thought that Kansas State's decision to go for that fourth down, down 7-0, I thought that was going to be a critical moment, a big crossover, you know, crossroads kind of moment. Do you take the points there and make it 7-3 and get some confidence, or do you try to go and tie the game? They ran, you know, two or three plays from the 1950s, and they didn't get anything. It didn't matter. It really didn't. Like, it wasn't a crossroads at all, but they showed at that moment, because you had to have been able to sense that that was your moment and that that was all they could come up with offensively. From that point to the end of the game, I mean, this stat sheet is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
539 to 149 was total yards. 26 to 9 in first downs. 240 to 73 running the ball. Like, there's just not, beyond a certain point, I went back to rewatch it last night. And once I got to, I think it was either 21-0 or 28-0, I just fast-forwarded to the next time Iowa State scored and kind of reminded myself how they did it. There's just not a ton for me that you take. What this was, I think, Trey, is Iowa State getting the game that Texas wished they could have gotten last week. A get some rhythm, wear a team out you're supposed to wear out.
That's an interesting way to put it.
You know, like, everybody felt good. You could Brock Purdy had rhythm, and the tight ends and the running back. Everybody just felt like it was a good day. Whereas Texas had to sit and hopefully not develop rust and now, and Tom Herman talked about it, go on like this 20-day break, and you're trying to get back to it. So the good news would be they have a short week and you don't, mm-hmm. but maybe the bad news is they're in football rhythm and you're not.
I wish it was a slobber knocker to the end versus starters getting to sit midway through the third quarter.
Yeah, we talked about this being a physical ball game.
Right.
That's the other thing. Like,
it turned out not to be.
Brock Purdy wasn't on the field for their yeah. last touchdown.
And watching Chris Klieman try to call offense in key situations, it was a lot like watching what Mike Gundy was trying to do or try not to do in critical situations last year, and to a lesser degree this year, too. He just knows he's limited at the quarterback position, and he knows he has a guy that could become good at some point, but you run the risk of making a catastrophic mistake if you put too much on his shoulders. And so last year you would see Gundy on like third and goal from like the 7-yard line, still trying to hand the football off. Mm-hmm. Kansas State was having to make a lot of those similar decisions they have for the last couple months now, ever since Thompson went out with the injury. But specifically on Saturday, you mentioned the fourth down going for it. Like, you knew what they were going to do there.
Yeah, no, I would have been shocked if they'd thrown the ball. I thought that's right. what they should do, but I was going to be shocked if they did it. Yeah, Breece Hall ended up with 15 carries, a 9-yard average, and 2 touchdowns in the game. Iowa State wins big.
40, is that good?
45. That's pretty good. 9 yards every time you touch it. Not bad. 45-0 was the final there. We'll continue to talk Texas throughout the show. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Joe Cook of Inside Texas will be joining us on Mondays to break things down. We'll start to get his thoughts on Texas and Iowa State. And up next, it is a rarity. We get to talk about a Cowboys win and a Texans win at the same time. Stay with us. Plus more college football recap coming up at 1:30. Remember, Texas and Iowa State, 11 a.m. kick on Friday morning. Keep your fingers crossed. 7 a.m. for the pregame for Texas's next ball game. And at some point, we'll go over all the numbers and stuff, because control their own destiny isn't technically correct. We'll get to it on the Horn. Rolling through a Monday. Tom Herman press conference is done. We've been reacting to that. Plus, we're going to get into some NFL stuff. What do you got here, Sam?
This is a song called Joyous by Pleasure.
Very nice. Hope everybody's having a lot of joy and pleasure and good times on a Thanksgiving week. It is a crazy world in 2020. Couple items as we come back. A non-COVID shout out to Joe Burrow. With all the technology we have, a guy can let you know when he thinks the year's over, even before the doctors tell him the year's over. Joe Burrow suffers that injury yesterday and literally tweets out, "See you next year," before we get any actual word on what the injury is going to be. So he thinks he's done for the rest of the season. Hopefully he will heal up very quickly. Also, we've got to give a get well quickly to a former Longhorn coach, Rick Barnes, of course, now at Tennessee. He has tested positive for COVID-19, and Tennessee's basketball program has paused their activities. We will hope that he gets better very, very quickly. I'm seeing stories, Trey, of these basketball teams trying to figure things out and get to these preseason tournaments, and some of them are already going through stuff. Scott Drew at Baylor also has COVID-19.
How in the world is this season going to work out?
I do not know.
We've seen it affect college football at an increasingly bad rate mm-hmm. over the last, like, 3 weeks now. I mean, we're entering the meat of this fall to winter wave, if you will, right when college basketball is trying to fire up.
Here's another detail that Tom Herman didn't get into, but you tell me give me your gut on this one. Because in a normal year, what they would do is, because he talked about normal year, kids that live within a certain distance of Austin would get to maybe even go home for Thanksgiving. Well, you're probably not doing that in 2020, but when they're done playing Iowa State, assuming they get to play the game, let's hope they do, when they're done playing Iowa State on Friday, do you let them go for the weekend?
Like, no. Because you have another game the following Saturday, and that is a difference most years. I guess the 1 year that you make the Big 12 championship game, you do have a game the following week. Is after that, you have a week off until you start getting ready for the bowl game and finals to prepare for and everything else.
That's true. Those bowl games are coming quick this year.
But I believe Texas is also they're also amongst those schools who are sending students home at Thanksgiving and not bringing them back, correct?
That is true. Yeah, you're right. Campus-wise, that's
so
true.
So Texas football has to get right back at it. I mean, you may take the day off on Saturday And perhaps guys get to go home then, but aren't you trying to discourage that?
I would think,
to avoid more positive tests, to then have to consider doing something about the Kansas State game the following week, since you already had to reschedule Kansas because of things happening on the Jayhawks side?
Yeah, you're right. It's such a strange version of everything coming up, including Thanksgiving. We hope you can make it as normal as you possibly can, and thank you for making us a part of it. We bring you the Longhorn games. Of course, we bring you the Cowboy games all season long, which means you got another Thanksgiving date with the Cowboys this week. That is Washington and the Cowboys. 3 o'clock kick, so 2 o'clock pregame for you right here on the Horn. That is, of course, on Thursday. And Trey, it is a rarity. I don't know when the last time it happened was. I did not want to look it up because neither of these teams deserve that kind of a stat lookup. But the Cowboys and Texans won on the same Sunday. I mean, come on. Can we get a... No? I mean, it was... Hey, one of them beat Kirk Cousins, who had a perfect passer rating at one point.
Yeah.
And the other beat the Patriots. So, I mean, let's give them the love that they deserve.
I feel like that happened one other time this year.
I don't know if it did. Cowboys got it done 31-28. And, Trey, if you dialed this game up, this is...
They both won October 11th.
There you go. Of course they did. Why would I act like it has been a long time? It's not that long.
The only reason why I know that is because I remember writing in my intro about a month ago, oh my gosh, the Cowboys and Texans won on the same weekend. Didn't think that would happen this year.
The timing of the game that was great for Dallas, and because that game turned into exactly what I kind of thought we could see and what I was used to seeing as a Cowboys fan, which was Cowboys could score, but they also could give up a lot. And this game, to me, boiled down to who's going to have the lead with about 2 minutes to go. And it was the Cowboys. And once that was true, then you're asking Kirk Cousins to make plays, and Dalvin Cook is not as much of a factor. If it had been the other way around, you'd be asking Dalton to make plays, and Elliott can't be as much of a factor. So that worked for Dallas. They made enough stops, and they win the game 31-28. Win number three, right there in the hunt for the NFC East.
Well, let's be honest. None of us expected Zeke to play just about as well as Dalvin Cook in this game, and he has struggled mightily. Career futility in terms of lacking 100-yard rushing games in a row, but he does snap that streak yesterday, and that goes a long ways in helping the Cowboys to secure a victory, as does Tony Pollard's big touchdown run.
That was nice.
Both those things were huge. And here's the funny thing. Kirk Cousins wasn't terrible in this game. You were asking him to do a little bit too much at the end there.
Yeah, again, at one point he was 158.3.
Yeah.
At one point he had a perfect passer rating. But yeah, at the end, maybe a little too much to ask. And also, not to take away from Tony Pollard at all, but I would like to publicly thank the Minnesota Viking that just chose not to tackle anybody.
Yeah.
Because that's why that play broke open. So thank you. I believe it's Chris Jones is his name. Let me make sure I get, yes, Chris Jones, thanks to you, because that was your Thanksgiving gift for some reason to the Dallas Cowboys, the young man who played at Nebraska, second year, and Jonathan Vilma called him out brutally on the broadcast for it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that was horrific defense on that play. But, yeah, the Cowboys get it done, 31-28, and then the Texans found a way to beat the Patriots 27-20. And Trey, I would argue this is also a game where who was leading really matters in every game, I know, but who was leading at a certain point really mattered. If you can make this Patriots team chase you, it is very different than what it was with Tom Brady. What you couldn't do is let them. I thought after that first drive when Harris scores the touchdown, I thought, uh-oh, this train is coming for the Texans. But give Deshaun Watson credit. They were able to make this game about quarterbacks. We talked about it last week, and I said, if you can make that game about quarterbacks, Watson's better than Cam Newton right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what they did. So congrats to the Texans.
Yeah, and watching Deshaun Watson yesterday, maybe his best game of the year, that was showcasing to any prospective GM or head coach why the Texans gig is a good one, because you get to build around that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And kudos to J.J. Watt as well. A little bit of a blast from the past with him swatting passes and
four of them?
Getting all sorts of disruptive in the backfield as well. That's and awesome. Watching the Patriots try to come back at the end of that game. Part of it is on Cam Newton not being as good of a thrower as he once was, but part of it also is just you look across that roster and see the lack of like true bona fide options he has to throw the football to. You just did not expect the Patriots to find a way to tie that game up at the end.
Two tackles for Watt. They were both solos. The tackle for loss and four pass deflections in the game.
Wow.
Yeah, that was vintage J.J. Watt there. And yeah, it was not, I mean, you're not going to brag about a game where you had 55 yards rushing and what. It was a bit of a clunky game, but you kind of, I mean, you beat the Patriots at what they do right now. They play clunky run-based football, and you did. I really thought Damian Harris was going to go off. And at the end of that game, for that game to be as close as it was throughout, and the Patriots, but remember, they did get a two-score lead at one point, and I think that ends up being critical. Damian Harris had 11 carries. 11? That's it? How do you not get him five more carries just because?
And he led all New England running backs. He doubled up the next closest guy. James White had five carries. Damian Harris had 11, but it was just one of those games where both quarterbacks started to chuck it around. I mean, Cam Newton finishes with 40 attempts on the day, goes over 300 yards passing, but only has one touchdown to show for it.
Yeah, that is exactly the game the Texans needed to play. So congrats to them. And maybe you are the kind of fan. Both these teams go in, Cowboys and Texans, go into the week at 2-7. And I'll say it, Trey, this makes me old man on some levels, but it also makes me a kid on other levels. I cannot watch my team play and root for them to lose.
Mm.
I just can't do it. I can't do it in college when it's, well, it'll be better for the program if the coach is out. No, I don't care. I'm rooting for my team to, you play to win the game, and that is all I care about. I had a big smile on my face yesterday. I know Brad Kellner and a lot of Cowboys fans listening right now probably didn't, because you all want the best draft pick possible or whatever, but I'm hoping that Cowboys and Texans fans could enjoy that on some level. I mean, Texans fans, you beat the Patriots. Are you telling me that wasn't satisfying in some way?
Maybe in a very small way. I don't think it's as much about rooting against your team versus not being so affected if and when they do lose.
Oh, I can deal with that.
For bigger picture reasons.
I can absolutely find silver linings if they lose, but I'm not going to root for it to happen. There's no way.
And so the entire NFC East now has three wins, with the Eagles having a tie to take a half-game lead on everybody else in that god-awful division.
The extra sick ingredient is that those are the records, and they're in first, and the fact that it's a tie with the Bengals. Like, that is the extra little cherry on top of the garbage Sunday.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
That's who they tied. They tied Cincinnati to do that.
So the Eagles played one of Cincy's division foes yesterday, obviously losing to the Cleveland Browns, even though it was the final score is closer than the actual game was. I don't know how much of that you watched through the Red Zone channel yesterday. The Eagles have a serious issue at quarterback right now.
Oh, yeah, they're not
Carson
great.
Wentz is garbage.
Yeah, they're not good.
Awful.
Yeah, they are. That whole division is just bizarre. Andy Dalton's the best quarterback in that division right now.
You may be right about
that.
If you
add everything up, he's probably the... Are they the best team? No, probably not. Eagles are probably the best team. He's probably the best quarterback when you add it up. Yeah, the division is just... It's laughable to consider where they are. Three teams at 3-7, one at 3-6-1. Cowboys are minus 83 in differential, and they're a game out of first.
Minus 83.
Minus
good
83,
Lord.
Which, by the way, I can't... Let me just do a quick scan. That is the worst, other than Jacksonville's worse. That's it. Sorry, Jacksonville and the Jets.
That's quite the company to be in.
They're the only team. By the way, the Jets are minus 153, if anybody needs them. That's sick. Only division in football where everybody has a negative differential. Everyone does. All four of them. And two of them are getting together for Thanksgiving, so get ready. The Washington football team and the Cowboys are going to renew a rivalry. This is where you're going to want to show a lot of highlights of past games. Like, go back to NFC title games, go back to big matchups, you know, Clint Longley and Roger Staubach, Joe Theismann. Give us a lot of those highlights so you can distract us from this game that's, what, Alex Smith and Andy Dalton?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it is not good. And the Washington football team has a very disruptive defensive line that we saw make a huge difference the first time these two teams met, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago. So we'll see if that's the case once again. Considering that you now have finally made the permanent decision to move Zach Martin out to the right tackle spot.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even talk about
that
hunk of logic.
Yeah.
You're telling me that the Cowboys drafted Connor McGovern and then decided to let him play?
Whoa.
That was wild.
What a concept.
He plays right guard. Zach Martin, who's good at stuff, kick him out to tackle because Steele's terrible. And you actually had a game where Andy Dalton didn't feel like he was on the run all day. And Ezekiel Elliott actually ran the ball. All right. It wasn't phenomenal, but you said it. He got 100 yards.
Has he taken that Todd Gurley turn? I know Gurley has
had a
little bit of a rebound with Atlanta this year. But, I mean, seriously, he went from ultra-productive 2 seasons ago to these last couple of years. He's a little bit better than ho-hum, but not by much.
I'm just glad they're giving him the ball a little bit more. I feel like they lost trust in him. Maybe he lost faith in himself with those fumbles and stuff. But if you're going to pay him that much money, you have to organize your offense around him.
Yeah.
And then it all comes off of that. So I like the fact that then they're able to get the passing stuff coming off of that. You got, I mean, Dalton ends up with, he did throw the pick, but he ends up with nice numbers overall. And you're at 5 yards a carry. For Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, that's a pretty nice effort. Amari Cooper getting him 7 targets and Lamb 6 targets. By the way, can we just stop and talk about CeeDee Lamb's touchdown catch?
Oh, my goodness.
What in the world was that?
That was so freaking sick. Even my wife and my mother-in-law, who were barely paying attention, they happened to turn their heads after I initially reacted to that catch. And watching the slow-mo replays, they're like, how did that guy just do that? I'm like, he's just a freak of nature.
That was incredible. And for that and the Thielen catch to be in the same game, that Adam Thielen catch in the corner, it was one of those, oh, there's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way he's in. And he was. These guys are getting better and better at it. And last night we saw it on display with the Chiefs and Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
For Travis Kelce to be able to do that stuff with his feet on the sideline, that's a tight end. You're not supposed to be able to do that.
It's sick.
Just unbelievable. Incredibly entertaining, the NFL, all weekend long. Cowboys and Texans actually got to be a part of it. That was great. Kansas City and the Raiders last night. If I can have 2 helpings of that every year moving forward with Mahomes and Carr, and then we add fans in to Arrowhead and the new Vegas house. I mean, Trey, that was awesome last night. I didn't even care who won the game. I just sit back and, all right, boys, let's see. And I figured that Mahomes, once he got it last, it's like, okay, well, Mahomes probably goes and win this. And he does.
Hey, remember when people were joking about John Gruden's QB school and how effective that would actually be when applying it to real life with a guy like Derek Carr? Looks like he kind of knew what he was talking about.
How about all that wild stuff they caught on the mic last night with Derek Carr screaming out NBA players' names? Did you catch all that?
James Harden.
He said James Harden. He said, like, Kobe.
Yeah.
Purple hippopotamus at the beginning or something. It was awesome. Just to watch. And then you know what? Little things that those quarterbacks are doing that you can hear them.
Yeah.
Like Mahomes had a great one where a guy was in motion going to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And Mahomes looked up and saw the play clock was at 5. So he knew he needed to get the receiver to not be lazy on the stop because you got to get set. So he says out loud, like, hey, get set out there. And then he takes it. And I thought, well, that's a good, like, younger quarterback developing moment.
Yeah.
That was being fully aware of every single thing that was going on. And for the record, Trey, have you ever in your life seen a quarterback that's better at throwing while he's going backwards than Patrick Mahomes?
No.
Because I thought it was Aaron Rodgers, but I think it might be Patrick.
Really any direction. And the backpedaling while throwing perfect dimes isn't as much shortstop as anything else, but that's clearly baseball background for him. His ability to hit all those different throws regardless of which direction he's moving.
He does what a lot of other guys I've watched do. Baker Mayfield likes to do this. When Manziel was at A&M, he did it. When they bail left, my mind tells me that a right-handed quarterback bailing left doesn't make any sense, that he should be bailing right because it's kind of with his arm. But if you can get those shoulders turned, Rodgers likes to do it too. Aaron Rodgers likes to go left. I remember a throw he made at Tech where I'm like, well, if you can do that. He went back left corner of the end zone, threw about a 35-yard pass. It's like, well, if you can throw it accurately, I guess.
Yeah.
And last night, he bailed left on one, and they had that rush coming, and he hits, and Kelce realizes it as it's happening, changes his route, and he throws a dime to Kelsey. And I'm like, dude, I can't even get on you at that point.
Well, he'll bail left, and then he'll do the arm angle thing on top of that. So he'll bail left, yeah, and then he'll go three quarters or straight submarine a ball, and it'll be just a perfect pass to his receiver.
I love that they'll play twice a year. I love that they hate one another. I love that it got chippy. I love that that stupid bus trip around the stadium actually matters to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. I love every layer of that. Raiders, Chiefs, give me more. I loved it.
One other example from being able to hear quarterbacks a little bit better with less of a crowd now, and I know they're piping in artificial noise in a lot of these games, but I think I'm almost positive it was the Eagles-Browns game. Mm-hmm. The Eagles were on offense, and it was a fourth down, and Carson Wentz was saying Heineken, 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 saying it clear as day. And I was like, you know what? I guess that's fitting because, you know, regardless of whatever audible he just called to, this play is going to stink.
That's funny. Dude, yeah, I love all this stuff we're
hearing. You know what it was? It was like a false start or something. So it's like, there you go.
There it is. There it is. And it was Collinsworth or somebody making the point this weekend. It feels like we're going to get more of those hard count, make the defense jump. Because
sure,
in an empty stadium, that sound is just magnified. So you're freaking the defensive players out and they're jumping across.
Yep.
A lot of good NFL. It'll end up tonight with another winning matchup. Rams at the Bucs is 6-3 at 7-3. That is how this week ends. So congrats to the Cowboys and Texans. They both get wins. Cowboys, Washington, Thursday afternoon at 3, pregame at 2, right here on the Horn. All right, coming up, we will recap some college football for you. Bedlam went about like we thought it would go. Ohio State did what we thought they would do, but maybe not the way we thought they would do it. And how about Northwestern? Plus, if you're a Longhorn fan, you control your own destiny as long as you do one thing in this next game. We'll tell you what it is on the Horn. Well, if you're having a good start to Thanksgiving week, everything shortens up this week. Texas playing Friday morning against Iowa State, 11 a.m. kick. What do you got, Sam?
This is Moving by Brass Construction.
There you go. Senior night becomes senior morning, senior breakfast for the Longhorns. Sam Ellinger and the crew of that 2017 class, you heard Tom Herman talk about it. If you heard his press conference today, kind of hard to believe that time has already flown, Trey, and these guys are seniors. It's going to suck for them that and Tom Herman was kind of trying to talk around it, but man, the full stadium and fans giving the seniors love, that's part of what this time of year is about. And I'm about to I'm glad we're getting the rivalry games and I'm glad we're getting senior days, but the version of it we're going to get is still going to kind of suck when you have limited crowds trying to give these kids the love. Like Sam Ellinger's last game at DKR, like you're going to be there.
And yeah, my kids and I are.
Your kids talked you into going and all that stuff, but you know what? It's going to feel totally different than it should.
I feel like the student section may be fairly empty too, because everybody goes home for Thanksgiving and doesn't come back. How many kids are going to turn back around
right
to attend this game on Friday?
Yeah, that's a great point. That part of it's going to be weird too. And just getting up for an 11 o'clock kick, ready to roll. Texas has to get up for an 11 o'clock kick after having that long not playing. And then Iowa State should be in a pretty good rhythm after just wearing K-State out, getting some rest. They're getting to rest some of their guys in a 45-0 game. We will see what it looks like. But Iowa State did look pretty good over the weekend. Obviously, that's a big part of our college football recap today and going back over. What jumped out at you about college football other than Iowa State? Because we knew we'd be peeking in on that. That's the Longhorns' next two opponents. What else jumped out at you this week from college football?
Oklahoma's domination of Oklahoma State continues. Bedlam is not much of a rivalry, despite the fact that we insist that it is each and every year. And Indiana was able to keep it close with Ohio State, despite the fact that they weren't really able to capitalize on all the turnovers that they created in that game. And they were also not very opportunistic in terms of turning the football over. Happened once inside the Ohio State 5-yard line.
Ooh, that was big.
Yeah, the pick six as well. I mean, yeah. Indiana very well could have won that game on Saturday, Chad.
If I tell you they only lose by 7 and they didn't have positive rushing yards, you'd have punched me in the mouth. They had minus 1 yards rushing, and that game was a touchdown at the end. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That was a weird game. But we were just talking during the break, too. If I'm an Ohio State fan, your defensive backfield better get ready, and they better get ready fast.
Because
if they match up with Alabama, Mac Jones is going to thrash that group.
Yeah.
He will pick them apart on level. Trust me, I'm an A&M fan. I know what it looks like when Alabama, this Alabama, picks your defense apart. Ohio State was getting beat by a lot. And those are talented guys at Indiana.
Sure.
But they got him at Bama, too. That matchup would be particularly bad for Ohio State. They've got some things to tweak up. And Fields can't be that sloppy. You just can't give the other team that much.
No, Penix is really good, and the Indiana receiver, his name is escaping me. It's a cool last name, though.
Freifogel.
He was awesome on Saturday.
He's great.
But you're absolutely right. If that's how the Buckeyes' back end plays in a game that matters come playoff time, specifically against Alabama or probably even Clemson, it's going to be a long afternoon for you guys. Yeah. You better get ready to find your way into a shootout
at
that point.
And heck, if they get in the wrong matchup with a team like Notre Dame that can throw a lot of different types of receivers at them, those tight ends and fullbacks,
sure,
the way they use, they can make some trouble for them too. If Ian Book's on, that could be a bad day for Ohio State.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see how they play now moving forward. So that was obviously a big game. You mentioned Oklahoma. Rattler with four touchdowns and no picks. Stevenson went 5.4 a carry. And that team is just – like, Trey, we all wish they'd go away. But, man, Oklahoma's finding themselves at the right time. There's nothing in this conference that I've seen that is better than what Oklahoma's doing right now. If you want this conference, you are going to have to beat them, I think, to get it.
Shame on the rest of this conference. This was a year that Oklahoma could be had.
Yep.
And it's not feeling that way right now. And perhaps a team that the Sooners have already faced, because I feel like the end of their schedule is pretty easy, but perhaps you get a Texas or an Iowa State. I'm not even going to say Oklahoma State. That's preposterous to think that they're going to play the Sooners to a close game anytime in the next decade. But if you get a team that that might try again with the Sooners, and obviously Iowa State beat them the first time around, maybe they give them a game, but the Sooners are the cream of the crop. Once again, Chad, even a year where they had to reload so much on both sides of the football and replace another all-conference caliber quarterback, they've done it.
We'll see if they're not paying attention in Morgantown this week, and then they finish off at home against Baylor. But Oklahoma looks really good right now. And then last week, I mentioned that if you looked at the stats and dug a little bit, there was nothing to learn about Northwestern and Wisconsin. They had both beaten garbage. We couldn't really tell how good the defenses were. And then Northwestern goes out there and wins it 17-7. Wisconsin was about as sloppy as any team could be. You go on the road and hand somebody five turnovers, you just don't win many of those games. Wisconsin completely disappointing. And Northwestern now controls the west side of the Big Ten to try to get to that title game.
Yeah, that's not saying a whole lot. But, hey, they could still make it back to the title game to get their asses kicked by Ohio State. Yeah, you know, even with what Wisconsin had done through their first couple of games, I felt like this might be a little bit of a struggle for a season for them. And that certainly happened versus the Wildcats on Saturday.
So tomorrow is our first CFP rankings, the AP poll. Nothing changed in the top eight. Bama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Clemson. Bama's got all the first place votes now, if you care. Then it's A&M, Florida, Cincinnati, BYU. So, Trey, it's going to be some combo of Bama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Clemson. Is there any reason not to have those as your top four? It's that order, right? You got to put the undefeated teams first, and Clemson's at four.
Yeah, I saw Herb Street throw out his, I think it was his top six and first two out, and A&M wasn't anywhere on that list, but he had Florida on the list. I didn't quite understand his logic there, but I was also watching that broadcast with the sound down, so I didn't hear his explanation.
I've seen some people putting Cincinnati and BYU as the 5 and 6,
right,
because they're undefeated. I get that logic. And maybe, I think just right now there's an eyeball test going on with Florida where people understand that they lost to A&M, but Trey, they're Purdy. They just are. They're Purdy. They win Purdy. They throw the ball all around. The Aggies do not play an eye-pleasing brand of football unless you're me.
Yeah.
And I don't mean just me, a fan. Me, I like defense and tight ends and stuff like that. It's just not flashy. So the Aggies are going to have to make an argument a different way. They're going to have to really handle LSU. And they're going to have to wear out Auburn, but they got to go win that game. And they've got to make sort of statements, especially now that they have two possibly at the end with Tennessee and Ole Miss, where they have a chance to maybe make a little statement. So tomorrow night is the first rankings. We'll see what goes on there. By the way, AP poll, coaches poll, you need to install a quick little rule. I don't care what your point system says. When two teams end up right next to each other and they've played, just put the team that won on top. Is it that difficult?
No.
OU is above Iowa State in the AP poll, 14-15. Well, they played. Iowa State won the game. And in the coaches poll, Florida is above A&M, one spot.
Yeah.
What? At some point, we have to have a reason we play the games, and that needs to be one. What are we doing?
Yeah, the logic is starting to resemble how head football coaches are treating field goals at the ends of games, Chad.
Oh, no.
Getting back to the Ohio State-Indiana game.
Here we go.
There were, what, like three and a half minutes left?
Yep.
Ohio State has a 4th-and-1 from around the, I don't know, somewhere around the 15-yard line. You kick the field goal, and I think you go up 10 points.
42-35.
42-35, so that's what the final score was. So you go up 10 points at that point. When did two possessions become a worse option than the possibility, and it's not 100%, by the way, this possibility, the possibility of getting to burn more clock? I just don't understand.
I don't get it, Trey. They were at the 7-yard line, 4:40 to go in the fourth quarter, and Ryan Day didn't like the idea of a 10-point lead. You're Ohio State, man. How bad is your kicker? You're at the 7. That's a 24-yard kick. Did I do my math right? 7 plus 7. Yeah.
So you get it, and it's a go. It's a go to goal to go situation. So you're running the you are either winning the game by getting the touchdown, or probably still winning the game by kicking the field goal if you get that fourth down. Or you could just get the surefire 3 points right there and go up two scores. Because guess what happened? They didn't get it. And Indiana had a chance to go down and tie that game. Now they didn't do it. I think Indiana ended up getting the ball back one more time because they were so bad on that next possession that Ohio State got the ball back. They did get to run clock at that point, but it's just needless. Just kick the field goal right there, Ryan Day. I get it that it's 4th-and-1 and you love your offense. Trust the 3 points, though. Two possessions is a big deal when there's that little time left on the clock.
Speaking of two possessions is a big deal, Trey, the end of the Cincinnati game was another case of you and I apparently are crazy. We have no idea what's going on, and these teams are much smarter than us. So here's what Luke Fickell decided to do. It was 36-33, late in the ball game. They were kicking down to, where was it, minute 43, minute 34. First and goal on the 5 with a minute and 34 seconds to go. They ran the ball intentionally to the 1-yard line and fell on the ground. So they didn't want a 9-point lead, which would have led to a 10-point lead because it's a college extra point. Instead, they decide to completely kill the whole thing, which is fine, except for the fact that on 4th-and-goal, they had to kill one more play. The center snapped it over the quarterback's head. Thankfully, it wasn't straight over his head. It was a little off to the right. He was able to tip it a little bit. The ball went to the ground. The quarterback was able to cover it. But because there was time left, UCF actually got a play from their own 4 at the end of the game. Just take the points, man. So this is the Cleveland play. This is Nick Chubb all over again. When you are up 3 or more, a touchdown is never a bad idea. Ever. Never. Not once. Not ever. Stop playing analytics to that level. Why are they so scared, Trey?
We've made ourselves football decisions stupid with all the statistics that exist now.
Oh, my God.
We're playing percentages against one another versus doing what is the most logical thing in a situation. That's what it boils down to.
I don't understand it. I don't understand it. You're two scores in that situation, it's a minute and a half to go. They have to score, get an onside kick, and score again. If they do it, well, you just sucked that day.
Data has value in all sports, but there is a balance that has to be struck between looking at statistics and understanding intuitively what needs to happen in a certain situation. And there are far too many people that are leaning too hard on these statistics.
Yeah, and they showed the guy on the sidelines for Cincinnati with the binder with all these colors in it. I'm like, dude, does that binder at all describe a 10-point lead as two scores? Because that's why it's important.
Such a simple stat, but oh my gosh.
I have no idea what's going on. If one of my teams is doing that, running backs falling at the 1, like, what are you doing? That makes no sense. But in the end, it didn't cost them. They won the game 36-33, but I'm sure there was some Vegas thing involved, maybe an over-under or a line that didn't get hit, because I'm guessing Cincinnati wasn't a 2-point favorite in that game.
If there's a minute left and you're up by 1, and you break away and you could score a touchdown.
Sure.
The opposition, there's a lot of little ifs here.
Yeah.
But the opposition doesn't have any timeouts left. I understand you falling down at the five.
Right.
Because you can't just burn the clock there. And the opposition, theoretically, could get the ball back, go down and score and get the two-point conversion to tie the game.
Right.
That's a situation where it makes sense. When you're talking about going in for a surefire two-score lead, though,
right,
give me a freaking break. Stop trying to rationalize why it's a better decision not to go in the end zone.
Even if you want to be super scary or super scared, I give you 9 points and down the ball.
Exactly.
That's what you want. 9 points is two scores, and then it's done.
Yeah, go Kingsbury from the Hail Mary.
Right.
From 8 days ago.
Yeah, that had a little nerdy angle to it. Okay, fine, Cliff, you're right. If you block the extra point and they return it, it's tied. I get it. I got you. But not that. Not what we saw with Ohio State or Cincinnati. That's wild. I didn't think I would see that with one of the best teams in America. And Cincinnati's trying to prove that they're one of the best. They are trying to make that undefeated argument, and they do sit at number 7 in the AP. We'll see what the CFP does with them in the first rankings tomorrow night. Up next, it's Where Are We At in Society? Sam Pica and Am I the A-Hole? Coming up at 2:05, Joe Cook of Inside Texas and the 1-0 podcast to talk Longhorns on the Horn. Thanksgiving week underway. What do you got, Sam?
This is Too Tight by Confunction.
Nice. Sam Pica coming right up with some Am I the A-Hole and Where Are We At in Society. We got Joe Cook of Inside Texas at 2. And we'll get into this more as the week goes on. But Longhorn fans, just remember the number 8 this week. The number 8 is important. Yes, you control your own destiny, but only if you beat Iowa State by 8 points or more this week. Just know I did the math. You don't need to dig in. We'll get into why that is, but 8 or more, you need to win at all costs, but you also need to win by 8 or more to make sure it's all under your control. So the people that are saying Texas controls their own destiny, that's not technically accurate. They could end up in a tiebreaker where winning that game by less than 8 takes them out. Just saying. It is out there. So 8 or more is key for Texas against Iowa State. All right, we'll talk to Joe Cook coming up about Texas and Iowa State and the Tom Herman press conference from today. But right now, let's go Where Are We At in Society.
Where Are We At in Society today?
Where Are We At in Society, brought to you by Lynch Plumbing, commercial and residential services. When you're in a pinch, call Lynch, 512-450-3416, online, lynchplumbingtx.com.
All right, shout out to Lynch Plumbing. Sam's going to give us the situation, and we'll find out if the person is in the wrong. Here we go, Sam.
Fell apart. We're back. All right. During my last shift, a group of 4 women in their late 20s came in. They were a pleasure to have as customers. They ordered 4 of our house cocktails to start with and then went over the menu for their entrees. When I was on my way back to their booth with the drinks, I walked back by the side and overheard one of them talking about how she was 14 weeks along. I rounded back and they were still talking about the same subject. It was clear to me that one of them was pregnant. I figured out which one it was, and I figured having one drink wasn't a big deal. They ordered their entrees and I went off to handle other tables. After about 5 minutes, they called me over again and asked for another round. At this point, I started getting concerned, but I took the order and cheerfully said I'd be right back. This time, I went to the bartender and asked him to make one of them a virgin cocktail. He was confused, but he's a good friend of mine, and I told him to just trust me. A few cocktails later, hers, strictly virgin, they started getting rowdy, and Miss Pregnant Woman was also getting into it. I figured that since she didn't notice, things were all okay. The problem came when I took them their check, and they asked to split the bill at the register. When Miss Pregnant Woman got to the counter, I saw her cocktails were marked with virgin. My bartender had edited them in the system for inventory's sake. It was too late for me to edit them back, so I just had her pay, hoping she wouldn't look at the receipt. They all thanked me and left a pretty generous tip in the process. They were talking in the parking lot for the next short while, presumably waiting for an Uber or something, and several minutes later, Miss Pregnant Woman came back and asked what virgin on the receipt meant. I fessed up that it meant non-alcoholic. She blank stared at me for a few seconds and then asked if she had ordered a non-alcoholic cocktail. I said no, but I told her that I assumed she wanted one seeing as she was pregnant. It was a lame lie, I'll admit. But she looked me in the eye and asked me to return her part of the tip. I did so, and she then talked to my manager. My manager took me into her office and literally shrieked at me until she was hoarse. I stood my ground and told her that I wasn't going to be responsible for FAS. I don't know what that is. Maybe some baby disease, but...
Fetal alcohol syndrome.
Ah, there you go. Smart guy. She told me that she was taking me off the calendar until she decided what to do with me. She also informed me that I could get the restaurant in some serious trouble for discrimination, and upon examination of my state's laws, she is correct. Am I the a-hole?
Wow.
Yeah, you are.
I guess you are. I'd never thought of this part of the bartender job, Trey. We obviously know the stereotype of are you too drunk to drive and that kind of stuff, but is a bartender allowed to play that morality game?
No.
He's just got to deliver those drinks, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Wow.
Even if she's pregnant, bro? I don't know.
That's really interesting.
I feel like he's not that, at the very least, he's not that big of an a-hole if he is being an a-hole. I mean, he's trying to protect you
a
little bit.
He is on some level, though.
You have to let that person make her own mistake there. And it sucks. It sucks to say it like that, but you can't be the morality police in that situation.
If there's anybody out there that's been a bartender, or if you are a bartender and you've been involved in that situation, give us any details you'd have, because that fascinates me. I've never thought about that discussion. Once you find out somebody at the table is pregnant, do you have any kind of responsibility as a bartender?
And it's not the bartender, by the way. It was the server.
Or as the server.
You may feel like you have some responsibility, but that's still not your business. you have to let human beings make their own terrible decisions, which, by the way, she was making a terrible decision. And even though you maybe have won that battle that night, the likelihood that that war will be won is slim to none, because that jackass is going to go out drinking someplace else and end up having 8 to 10 alcoholic beverages despite the fact that she's 14 plus weeks pregnant.
And by the way, if you're that woman standing in the parking lot, can't you or your friends realize what he did and just kind of give him a mental thanks and go about your day?
Yeah.
My God.
The fact that nobody stopped her and was like, hey, Sheila.
Yeah. Whoa.
Come on.
It's not that big a deal. In a way, the guy's doing you a favor. You know, you probably shouldn't be drinking. Let's just go home.
Yeah.
Do you really need to go make a scene? Oh, my God.
But it's also a matter of being deceived, and being deceived in a way where it's like, I know what's best for you better than you do. Because remember, it was never brought up. They never said anything in front of the server, like overtly in front of the server, that she was pregnant.
That's true. He overheard.
So it's him. There are layers that makes him the a-hole.
This says, I was a bartender on 6th and had this happen with a woman that was at least 6 months pregnant, but they didn't give any more info than that. This says, I've been a bartender before. Not your business, amigo. Not your business.
Nope.
Let her drink that kid to stupidity, just like mom. I don't know if that's the policy, but
it's funny, because when Justine was pregnant with both of our kids, occasionally she would crave a glass of wine. She wouldn't ever go any further than a single glass of wine, but occasionally, even at like 6 months, she would want a glass of wine. But she's like, will you order a glass of wine for me so I don't get dirty looks when I order this glass of wine? Because inevitably somebody is going to be upset with you for having even a sip of alcohol when you're that pregnant.
That's true.
Despite the fact that the science shows that it is not detrimental to the baby's health to have a single glass of wine once every couple weeks.
Wow. Yeah. There's some good stuff coming in.
Oh, man. This isn't totally relating to that, but remind me at some point this week to talk about the conversation that I had to have with Vivian yesterday with regards to what a friend has told her about Santa Claus.
We'll definitely get into that. There's Am I the A-Hole? Only had time for one today, Sam. I'm sorry. Save the other one for another day. Sam Pika and Where Are We At in Society. Up next, we'll talk some Longhorns. Joe Cook of Inside Texas will be joining us on Mondays now, and we'll get his thoughts on the press conference today and this matchup with Iowa State. Plus at 2:30, why November 23rd matters. It was on this day in 1984 that Doug Flutie did that. We'll talk about it on the Horn.